Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. You know, it can be hard to figure out a great deal when there are so many Black Friday and holiday sales. And today on the show, we're going to talk about what the hot technologies might be this holiday season. Also, how to stay safe and avoid scams when buying. And our regular guest, Jesse LeGru, back with us. He's an information security architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. He designs, develops, and implements security standards and protocols. So it's great to have Jesse back. And let me see here. What technology is on your wish list for the holidays this year? Something you're keeping an eye on, maybe when it comes to the Black Friday deals? We can help you feel more confidence in a technology purchase. And we'll do that as we visit with Jesse today. And I'd love to hear from you. Join in with your questions and comments. The number to call is 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Jesse LeGru, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
It's great to be here.
Black Friday is a big day for technology shopping. Has it changed, or maybe how have you seen it change over the last decade?
Well, I think that the entire shopping experience has changed because it just seems to have expanded. So while I think everyone was really getting used to yes, what was considered, you know, Black Friday, the Friday after Thanksgiving. We then got introduced to Cyber Monday, which happens the following week and was really meant for a lot more online sales. But then I think we see right now a variety of things happening both before and after that, kind of instead of just this one day where people are focused, people are kind of focused on this interesting shopping experience for a couple of weeks almost.
Yeah. Well, is there a best time of year really to be shopping for electronics?
It's a good question. It does depend. I think one of the interesting items this year is since there has been a challenge with a variety of supply chains, a lot of that is kind of changing on a day-to-day or week-to-week basis. And some of the products as well, which is really good to keep in mind, many products from different vendors are relatively price controlled. So if you go from one store to another, the price tends to stay the same unless you have particular deals that are happening during the year. And usually holidays tend to be those times where you might get a deal. It doesn't mean there will be a deal, but usually there's a higher likelihood when there's a holiday around the corner.
So maybe, well, do you think Black Friday deals could be worth it if you're looking for something in particular?
I think it could be, and that's at least what I've experienced even looking at a variety of items. You know, the one thing you might be looking for in terms of getting a deal this year, that may or may not happen. But if there is something else that catches your eye, there might be a good deal on it, even if it's not the one that you know, we're kind of hoping around the year. You just never quite know exactly when that deal is going to appear and if it's going to be really the right time to purchase.
And, you know, I'm not looking at this year-round and really I don't know what I'm doing, to be perfectly honest. Sometimes when you're looking at a sale on something, how can you be sure it's a good deal?
Normally, when I take a look at things, what I will do is I'll take a look at a variety of different sources to find out if what I'm purchasing, if it seems comparable to other resources.
Okay.
And there are a variety of other sites you can go to. You can go to, for example, Google Shopping, or you can go to other online retailers and compare those prices to see if they're similar or there's something unusual. And I think that's an important thing to look out for. And this is not just during kind of the holiday, but many times you might find technology and the price point looks dramatically different from one place to another. It actually could be the case where there's one small modification in that model number that means you're not getting an aspect of that technology or that product. So if you do see those drastic price differences, definitely dig into the details, see if the model numbers and the other items included in that package line up item by item, because you might just find out you purchased a product, but it just came without one feature. And maybe it's nothing you actually needed, and so you get to save that money. But it's always good to do some comparison and to verify that you're getting exactly what you're hoping to get.
You know, I've never gone on to Google Shopping. Do you just type in Google Shopping, and what do you get?
You'll get a list from a variety of vendors, and it works like any other Google search. As soon as you search for, you know, a specific item or a different topic, you can use the shopping tab and basically view from a variety of vendors. It tends to be a little bit different depending on what you're looking for. If you're looking at, you know, local retailers around your area, or if you're looking for particular online retailers, but at least it can give you an idea of where some price differences might occur, and at least help, you know, ask a few different questions in terms of, you know, why is this price so dramatically different at this location than this other location? And you could see shipping differences and a variety of other things too. So I'd like to say it was a nice, easy. This one is definitely the best one to get, but you need to make sure, does it come with the same package? Does it have all the other accessories? But also when you're shopping online, especially, and if you're not physically going to a store, there can be a lot of other items that come into play. So how much is the shipping? Is there additional fees or something else that are included when you make that purchase? All of those could make something that looks like a great deal in the end actually turn out to be not a great deal, and it actually ends up being more expensive, or you're missing that one crucial item that you were hoping for.
Let's take some calls. You can join in, by the way. The number is 800-642-1234. Dan in northern Wisconsin, what's on your mind?
Yeah, so I've been looking for a new work computer, and one thing that I've often seen is they almost encourage impulse buying during basically Black Friday month at this point. Places like Amazon will have their 24-hour deals where you can buy while stock lasts, and so you don't really have the same opportunity as you used to compare what different places are doing for Black Friday. One thing I'm kind of curious about is how do you make sure you're getting the best deal that's going to be out there when a lot of places aren't releasing their full list of deals quite yet?
Yeah, it's a really good question. It's really, really difficult to say. One of the challenges, especially when buying a new laptop, is, you know, the models will change, the prices will change, and something that was purchased today, you know, a month from now, that same device might be replaced with a brand new model. And you find out you can actually purchase it for a little bit cheaper. So it depends on kind of how fancy of a device you're getting. The more cutting edge a device might be, the higher likelihood that price may dramatically drop in the short term as new devices get released. And it's really difficult to know when you look at those, any kind of deal, whether it's through the holidays or Black Friday, is that really going to be a significant deal to what you can get today? So if, you know, if there is an interest in trying to purchase something during that time to get a better deal, the one thing I'd recommend is do the research now. Find the device that you really want, find the specifications that you really want, so you know that what you're looking for. Make sure you know which locations have it, what those price points look like, because it at least makes you better prepared. So when those deals do come out, you have kind of this known item that you're looking for. You kind of know the price point, you know the best places to look, you know the accessories that it's coming with. And then if that deal does come around, you have an easy way to compare it. So basically come in with a plan, have those items you're looking for. You know, you might find out there is or is not a benefit to purchasing during that time. That just might not be the case. But at least you'll have some more information. So if it does come up, you can be prepared. You've done your research ahead of time, and you can go ahead and hopefully get that good deal that you're looking for. But also, you know, keep in mind, make sure the model numbers match up, make sure the warranties match up. Those are a variety of other items that, you know, in the fine details, can dramatically change the price points and can look like a deal, but you're actually purchasing something different. It doesn't mean it's necessarily a bad purchase, but it is something to factor in, because that could be one of those reasons. So it might look like a great deal. It just turns out it's a little bit different. So keep it in mind, do that research, you know, do it ahead of time, come with a plan. For any of these, going in and just wanting to purchase something because it is less expensive is probably the more risky, just because during this time, and you know, even as we just talk about safe purchasing, any of those times, anything that anyone can do to increase your excitement or feeling that there's maybe a little bit of pressure to purchase something, I think is any one of those risky times. And I think whenever those feelings kind of bubble up, it is a great time to kind of pause and consider, you know, is this a decision that I really do want to make? It's usually what we tell people, if you do have, you know, for example, an email or something, you're uncertain whether it's open or safe, whenever you do have those feelings where you might be afraid or you might be excited, pause before doing anything, because it could turn out those feelings might lead you to a bad conclusion, or in this case, a bad purchase. So pause, do the research, but plan ahead of time and know what you're going to look for.
Good luck, Dan, with that new computer purchase. Art in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Art.
Hi. I'm interested in getting something like a Fitbit. I've seen prices range from $49 to like $400. I have an iPhone, and I'm wondering, and it's important that I get something that's pretty accurate in terms of heartbeat, stuff like that. So the idea is how, where, or what to get.
That's a good question. And there's, I mean, Fitbit has a variety of trackers. Right now, actually, I think over the last couple of years, there have been a variety of health trackers that have really inundated the market. And Fitbit, I think, is one of the organizations that has not just one or two Fitbits. They have quite a selection depending on the depending on the form factor, how easy it is to read, what the size of the screen is, and especially considering you're an Apple user, one of the items I would consider would also be potentially an Apple Watch, just because a lot of those capabilities are also built into those devices, and I think it could also give some additional capabilities that, well, maybe you do want or maybe you don't want them. A lot of the trackers do more than just tracking. They will also, you know, forward on text messages to your device so you can see them. A lot of people don't want that, and usually it is a feature you can turn off, but it is something to keep in mind. And, you know, in that price range, I mean, from $50 to $400, it is a large range, and you can get a lot of different capabilities for that price point. And what I'd probably do is I'd actually recommend taking a look at, I mean, the Apple Watch, I think, is potentially a really good option, just because it does combine well with the iPhone, and I think it will also fit within that price point. But you're also going to want to take a look at kind of the form factor, because they can look very, very different. They can be slimmer, and you maybe have less screen real estate to read. And that is going to be another factor. It also depends, you know, are you going to be doing rigorous activity? How does it fit on your wrist? How is it adhered? Also, is it something where you might feel you're in a position, if you're working out or doing some kind of activity, where the device could get damaged? And I think that's something to keep in mind as well. How is the screen protected? Is it glass? Is it something that could crack? Is it something that's a little bit more resilient? Usually, to get a little bit more of that resilience, where it's going to be safer from, you know, something hitting it, it might be a little bit more expensive or have different materials that are being used. I think there are other options as well. I think Fitbit and Apple, the Apple Watch, are going to be some good options. And there are a variety of others out there. I would actually, and I don't know if they would actually have this. I'd like to think they'd have this at kind of a any kind of health store with, you know, workout equipment and a lot of other things. I don't know if that's the case, because it is good to always take a look and see what the devices look like and how that matches up. And I think a lot of technology stores are going to be able to find it so you can actually see it and interact with it. But especially just for kind of heart rate monitoring, pretty much anything out there, you're going to be able to get those capabilities. It really just depends whether you want those added features and what that screen size is going to be. Generally, if you want the bigger screen and you want to make sure you have more capabilities, it is going to be a little bit more expensive. But I do think, you know, if you are able to take advantage of your device where you can have that synchronization, and so that would be the same thing if you had an Android device. I might be recommending an Android, more of an Android-compatible tracker. If you have an iPhone, I think not looking at the Apple Watch is not something I'd recommend. You do want to take a look at it just because it's there. It might match up really well. So I take a first look there, see what your options are. They tend to look the same, but you do have a lot of options for that price point.
I have an Apple Watch. I really love that watch. Just one thing I'd add, when they're talking about heart monitoring, for example, I don't think there's a difference between the $50 one and the $400 one, perhaps, when it comes to the actual good job that they do monitoring the heart rate or the heartbeat. It's the difference in the price, as you say, Jesse, is the add-ons. I have quite a few add-ons in mine, and I like all of them for sure. So there you go, Art. For sure, take a look at the Apple Watch and the Fitbit as well. Well, Jesse LeGrew, our guest today, as we talk about navigating Black Friday deals safely and holiday tech shopping, you can join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234. Email us to ideas@wpr.org. Natalie Guyette, our producer, Mackenzie Crummy, our on-air producer, Trina LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Great to have you along today as we talk about navigating Black Friday deals, safety, and holiday tech shopping with Jesse LeGrew from Madison College's Technology Services Group. Larry Mueller here. Join in. Questions, 800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Carol in St. Charles, Illinois, we'll give you a chance now. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for the show, Jesse. This is about a kid's toy. It's for my grandson. My daughter's trying to find it for him. They're on the West Coast, and she said she's looking for a Nintendo Switch OLED model with a white Joy-Con, and I didn't know where to tell her because I don't know gamers. Grandma doesn't game.
Okay.
That's a good question, and I think throughout, and kind of mentioned it earlier, there has been kind of a challenge with supply chain issues, so getting certain devices has been tricky. You might be able to get one online. I'm not sure what the supply looks like right now for Nintendo Switches. One thing I have heard recently is if you do have any local gaming stores, which you probably do depending on the size, or you'll have one around your area, or they will have one around their area, give them a call and find out what their supplies might look like or when they might be able to get them in. There might be a wait list for some equipment, but usually if they get it, depending on the situation, you might be able to kind of get some advance notice when they do arrive so you can actually go and purchase one. And I think that's probably going to be the most challenging is if there is just a chance where you might not be able to find it at a store. It's how can you get that information from somebody else and really from another store. And there are a variety of online stores right now that do sell it. Even taking a quick look, a lot of the devices are out of stock. And so you will find higher priced items from other sites or people reselling them at a higher price. And I think that's one of the potential risks is, you know, if you don't know who's selling it, you're never quite sure whether you're getting a good deal or if you're actually going to be purchasing what you want. So I'd make sure to just at least purchase from a location that you trust because you will find that other individuals are selling them at dramatic price points. And you can find they do tend to have waiting lists that come up from time to time. And you might be able to actually sign up and kind of put yourself into a raffle to get a device. For example, I might say at a certain time, the first 50 that respond will reserve their device, and you can hopefully get it in that time period. A lot of people find ways to, unfortunately, cheat that system, which isn't great for everyone else. But that's one reason I'd recommend, you know, calling your local stores, just find out if they are or not going to have any. They also might have some great recommendations for you in terms of other ways to find that information. Granted, I'm sure they want you to purchase from them, but they might be able to offer some additional insight. So it might take a little bit of tracking down, but utilize your local resources, because I think you'll find they have a lot of experience. And they're probably getting a lot of the same questions from pretty much everyone. I've been seeing this a lot with video game consoles, especially the PS5. And it's probably going to be similar for the OLED version of the Nintendo Switch.
There you go, Carol. Good luck. Appreciate your call very much. You know, Jesse, part of your answer there reminded me about scams, to talk about scams a little bit. When you're shopping online, and any comments on scams?
Yeah, looking at the gaming console, I think it's really easy to kind of get into a situation where, you know, you're looking for something, you're not quite sure where to get it, you find it somewhere else at a dramatically higher price point, but they actually have the device. That actually might be a completely legitimate purchase if it's kind of a known source. And that's one thing I'd always recommend if you are purchasing something online or even in person, at least have a little bit more knowledge about what you're purchasing from. So, you know, if you're somewhere just randomly on the street and purchase a new Nintendo Switch OLED from somebody, I'd probably be a little bit skeptical because I just don't know that individual. Am I getting really what I'm purchasing? If I go into a major retailer, I'm probably going to have a little bit more assurance that what I'm getting there is safe because they do have a little bit more control about how they're getting devices. And so it tends to be a more trusted source. Validating, you know, who or what is on the other end. And if you really don't have a good amount of confidence who you're really dealing with, I think it's a good idea to potentially go an alternate route because there are a lot of scams out there where you might be purchasing something from an outside party. You may never get a tracking or other details in terms of your purchase, and you might not actually receive a device. So you might end up paying for something that you never end up getting. So make sure what you're doing on the other end, it looks like it's from a trusted source. And that, you know, is an important thing too. Even when looking for other devices, you might find falsified websites. So let's say you're going to a major retailer, you're going to like Target.com. Make sure that it is actually the URL that you're going to. You might get an email that has a link that redirects to another place. It might look like a Target website, and at a glance, the URL, the web link in the address bar might look the same, although it might be slightly off, and it might be difficult to distinguish whether it's a trusted source or not. So I always recommend going to the website directly, typing in manually, or going to a trusted search engine to try to find some of that information. There's just a lot of individuals trying to take advantage of people wanting to find something really quickly. And once you get that opportunity, you don't want it to pass by. So it gives, you know, people that extra push to do something really, really quickly without thinking. Because they, you know, they do want to get that thing. They do want to get the Nintendo Switch, especially if it's really difficult to get. So I'd just be extremely mindful that sometimes, you know, they always say if it's too good to be true, it probably is. But if you feel like you're, you know, getting the best deal ever, like you never thought you could ever get it, do a little bit of double checking just to validate, you know, how safe is this? And one recommendation out there, if something does happen where, you know, you purchase something from a location that was not honest and you didn't get the device, or you do have, you know, something bad in your email, you can always report that to the Internet Crime Complaint Center, which is ic3.gov. And at least they can take that complaint to do something with it. They'd also recommend contact your local legal authority, because usually in this case, you know, you're going to have an issue with potentially getting a refund for that money with working with your bank. And in many cases, they also want to make sure that there is a police record of that. So there are some actions that can be taken if some kind of scam does come up. But sometimes it's not also just about getting your money. It's about getting your information so that, you know, somebody might be able to attempt identity theft. So just be careful of the information you're also giving out to an ND, to somebody else for a purchase. Most purchases that I've had, I don't think I've ever needed to, for example, supply a social security number. If somebody is asking for that just for a purchase, for me, that would be an indicator. This is probably not a place that I want to go because they're asking for information they really do not need for that purchase. So always be careful and try to limit the information you're sharing with others.
Hannah from Beloit emailed and wanted to know about phone chargers. She's considering buying family members extra iPhone chargers for the holidays, but is concerned that the cheap ones online, she's worried they'll ruin the phone, the cell phone. Can cheap phone chargers ruin iPhones?
In theory, that is true. So for iPhone chargers or anything Apple related, they usually have requirements so that you can identify whether there is a counterfeit connector. And usually it does have kind of a made by Apple logo on it. You can actually go, if you go ahead and even just search for it online, there is an Apple article that shows you how to identify counterfeit accessories so that you can make sure that they're safe. And they are. This also does include certified third-party accessories. So if it's not made by Apple but made by somebody else, hopefully it will give you some extra assurance that what you are getting is safe. It is possible that if you do have a charger or a cable that has some kind of defect, could it potentially damage your device? Yes. One of the other common things that you'll also find, and this is, I think, why the recommendations, I think airports have done a lot to make things accessible for people, including chargers for devices. But I think one of the recommendations people are getting when they're going out to these kind of public areas is don't use them, just because you never know if you're connecting into something that could be stealing information. It might be charging your phone, but it could be doing other things in the background you really don't want it to do. So either way, I would recommend make sure it has that made for iPhone or made for iPod, iPhone, iPad label on it. And if you really want to be extra cautious, you can purchase it just directly from Apple. Usually major retailers as well, the cables they're going to have, usually are going to have that label on it. If something looks really unusual, you've never heard of it before, to just be extra cautious, use something that you're a little bit more familiar with. And to be as cautious, you can get the cable directly from Apple just because you know that it's coming hopefully from that trusted source. Might be potentially a little bit more expensive, but you're also getting that peace of mind.
Yeah, and they tend to last longer, too. I have had some experience with limited experience with the cheaper ones, and they broke faster. So I don't do that anymore. I just go right straight to the Apple for my extra chargers. But chargers reminded me of batteries. It used to be that we had to remember that batteries were included or were not included when it came to holiday gifts. But now there's often a lot of parts and accessories not included. How do you make sure you have everything you need to use the technology?
Yeah, and that's another good question. And I think it comes down to that kind of the earlier comment, too, of really look into the details of what comes in the package. And it might also mean validating from a couple different sources. Usually, whenever, especially when purchasing something online or in a store, you will get a model name or a UPC for a package. And that usually will help determine what's in there. So For example, maybe you buy a printer. Well, does it come with the USB cable? Does it come with the ink? Does it come with extra ink, or does it come with other accessories? You might find that the model numbers or the codes are just slightly off by one character or one number, and that could be because some of those are included or not included. So be mindful of those different items, and then just really read through the list to see what it states this comes with and which items. And if you're not quite sure if that's the case or not, usually you can find another source that's either from a different store or even from the manufacturer that has a better description. Because I even think, looking at printers, for example, many times they'll actually have the different model numbers laid out in their manuals, and it will tell exactly what they come with or what they don't come with. So unfortunately, it requires a little bit of research. Otherwise, what you can do is you can also just call up the store. When I used to work in retail, we had people calling in all the time. Does this specific item come with this device? And so you can at least get some experience from the individuals working directly in the store that are also working with other customers. So do leverage local resources as well, just to validate what you're getting is what you hope to be getting.
What about speakers? If you're buying somebody a speaker, would you consider buying them a Spotify subscription as well?
It kind of depends on the end user. I think Spotify can be a great service, especially if people are already using it. I think most people that do use Spotify, I think they have free and paid versions. It kind of depends on the end user. I think one thing that I found myself, I really didn't like audiobooks. It took me just using or listening to one audiobook to have me completely switched. So even if you do have somebody that is not currently using Spotify and they want to kind of explore it and see if they do like it, I think it's a really interesting thing to check out, just to give somebody that other option. I personally don't use that service, but I know a lot of individuals that do, and they really do love it. And it could be you just find somebody that doesn't use it today, but they become converted to using that service in the long run. I would follow your knowledge of that individual if streaming music and other content over Spotify is something that seems like it would appeal to them based on kind of what they do on a day-to-day basis. I would say it is definitely worth a try.
A lot of us like to read reviews before we buy. How do we read just enough reviews without getting bogged down? Is there a secret to that?
Yeah, for the reviews, there are a couple items I look for, depending on the content or the website or, you know, the place you're shopping. You might have user reviews, but you also might have user comments. And I think some of the user questions and answers can be really useful, especially if you do have a question: does it come with this, or does it not come with this, or if you're using it this way, what do you notice? The user reviews can be really challenging, because you might have something that's highly rated, and then you look into the user reviews and you also have many outliers of this is a poor product. For me, what I would do, if I was looking at one product, I would probably look at reviews from a couple different websites. So just to validate, do they at least seem to match in terms of the overall review rating? Because that's probably going to be more indicative of how consistent it is. One of the challenges with a variety of other websites right now, people might create false reviews to increase those ratings so people are more likely to purchase it. Or you might have sponsored content that may take other products and put them lower down in the list. So it can be a lot more challenging to kind of filter those through. I would, if you have user comments or reviews or scores on two different websites, I think that's a good thing to do. Go to two different sites, see if the scores are relatively the same. And if you're comfortable with that, you can take a look at the questions and answers if you did have any particular questions. I found many times where I wasn't sure exactly what something came with. I found somebody had already asked the question and somebody else who purchased it answered it. But, you know, make sure you're also coming from a trusted source, because sometimes a lot of that is really fed by end users. And, you know, the end user, you're kind of putting a little bit of trust in that end user as well on the other side that's giving you that information. But use more than one source is basically my short answer. check it out. Look somewhere else. See if it about matches. Don't dive into the details too much. Many of the bad reviews tend to be outliers. Most experiences for a lot of products tend to be very good. If you tend to get something that's just really, really low reviewed, it's likely you probably want to look at a different option anyway.
Jesse LeGrew, our guest today, information security architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group, talking with him about navigating Black Friday deals, safety, and holiday tech shopping. You can join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or shoot us an email to ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking with Jesse LeGrew from Madison College's Technology Services Group. We've been talking about navigating Black Friday deals safely and also holiday tech shopping. We can take some of your other questions, too. If you have an issue or a problem with your technology, you can also join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us to ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Jesse, the Washington Post put up a holiday gift guide that we have linked at WPR.org/Larry. You have that list in front of you? I wouldn't mind going through some of the types of electronics they've got on their list.
I do.
So what do you think? Let's take that. What's the first one on the list? Suddenly I lost it, so now I have to grab it back again.
Yeah, I think they had a wireless portable battery, which kind of goes with the charger, too. I think it's been kind of a more common thing of people might be using mobile devices more often, and you kind of have to keep a device charged up, especially if you're traveling, and I think that's one of the challenging things. So kind of going back to that recommendation of, if you're in an airport, be cautious of those charging stations because you're just never quite sure, you know, what's on the other end. If you're ever interested, there are a variety of YouTube videos where people do things that aren't the greatest with those different charging stations. So it's hard to know in a public space whether something is safe. So being able to have a charging bank with you will allow you to charge your phone, other devices relatively easily. But also having the wireless charging, a lot of new devices are coming with those more and more often. So you don't even necessarily need to have that cable that we talked about as long as your device is capable with it. So it's a really nice option to have some wireless charging when you're kind of mobile and need something quickly.
Yeah, I think the one they recommended, the Anker Power Core, is like $50. Probably well worth it if you need to have your phone charged.
Yeah, and I've used other similar ones. Usually you're going to get, depending on the device, 2 to 3 charges out of it. So it's not just, it'll definitely usually last one person for a day, and it actually might last several people for a day. So having one of those, especially if you have capacity for it, can really be a time saver. If you're on the other end of this broadcast and, you know, it's nearing that noontime and your cell phone is just about to die, it might be a good indication that having some kind of mobile charger or something, especially if you're on the move, could be a good investment.
Yeah, I like that idea a lot. The there's one that I thought was kind of interesting. The Fujifilm has an instant camera, which I thought was kind of cool, where you can actually hold a photo. It reminds me of the old camera. Everybody used to have a camera like that. an instant camera.
Yeah, it actually does. Even the picture they have itself and the display kind of reminds me of an old Polaroid camera, where you take the picture, you get your printout, and then you're waiting that picture for a while as you're trying to wait and increase the time for or decrease the time for developing that picture. So it's kind of an interesting little item. It does allow you to get that small print, which is an inch and a half, I think, by an inch and a half. So it's actually a pretty small picture. I don't know how many people actually print pictures these days, but it sounds like kind of an interesting idea, actually, for if you know somebody who does scrapbooking, it could be a really interesting purchase.
Oh, I like that idea for scrapbooking. It could be great. Mary in Oshkosh, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Larry. Hi, technology guest. I live in a retirement community that has a Wi-Fi network set up for us to access the internet. So it's private, yet it's public in that all the other residents are using the same network. And I have a Wi-Fi connected printer. And I've been getting, on occasion, unsolicited printouts coming on my printer because somebody on the network must have chosen my printer as their printer. And my question is, how do I go about locking my printer so that it cannot be chosen by somebody else? Or if chosen, they wouldn't be able to send print jobs to it?
That is a really good question. Most of the printers, when you're connected wirelessly like that, they usually don't have a capability to block different devices from printing to it. The only thing you can really do is split up the network that your printer is using, which is a little bit challenging in your situation. So you have this wireless that you're getting from the location that you have. You and everyone else is connecting to it. Once you're on that shared network, really anyone is able to communicate with everyone else. And that's kind of, it can be good, but it can also be bad because, obviously somebody found your printer. If you wanted to still use that same wireless and find a way to protect your printer so no one else could print to it, I'd probably recommend thinking about using, and they have these small little wireless routers where you can actually kind of create your own network. This might be a little bit challenging if you're not used to setting up a network. So if you do have anyone that's technology friendly, I think it could be a good little project. But you can get these small little wireless routers for $30. Basically, you create your own little wireless network that you can talk in. And when somebody is connecting to the wireless network, they won't be able to find or communicate with your printer. So that little wireless will connect to the building wireless, and you'll be able to be the only one that can find your printer. That would be my one recommendation, at least kind of thinking about how things are set up right now. When you print to your printer, do you normally print over wireless, or do you have like a computer that's physically plugged in, or it's using a USB cable?
Wireless, because I might move my laptop throughout my apartment, and also it enables me then to print from my phone or my other notebook devices.
Okay, I probably would look into, I think that router option could be a good solution. Basically, you're creating your own wireless network bridged off of theirs. They may or may not support that. That's going to be the other thing. They might have rules against doing that. They also might have some local tech individuals that might be able to help you with it. If it were a problem I were having, for example, at home, I think using one of those little wireless routers to do that, I think would be very helpful. The other option, and if you do have relatively new devices, you may be able to print over Bluetooth rather than wireless. I think that would limit who might be able to print to your printer, because you have to be in a certain physical area in order to even be able to communicate with the printer. So I would check just to see, does your printer have Bluetooth available? And if it does, try it with one of your devices to see if you can connect via Bluetooth rather than wireless. If that works, you might be able to turn off the wireless option, which means no one can get to it from wireless, and then you can print to it from Bluetooth. And most newer laptops, cell phones, and other devices are going to have that kind of capability. But that could also solve your issue. Basically, disable wireless, use Bluetooth instead. Hopefully, that'll reduce that chance. But in this case, the only way is to try to create your own little wireless network, or find a way to physically plug in or use something else like Bluetooth.
There you go, Mary. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Jesse, you mentioned earlier, I believe you talked about Kindles, and Amazon, the Kindle Paperwhite is one of the suggested alternatives for people who might be interested in a gift for themselves or for somebody else. What do you think, Kindle Paperwhite?
Yeah, it's. I think it's a nice option for people who do like to use a dedicated device to be able to, you know, to read different, whether it's books or periodicals. I think the interesting thing that actually came with the Paperwhite is it will also play Audible audiobooks. So if somebody actually does want to potentially follow along, or they actually just want to listen to it, you could go ahead and do that using the Kindle Paperwhite. I personally haven't really used a dedicated reader like that, just because I've had a variety of other ways to do it, whether it's a different tablet, or, you know, cell phones and other devices might have Audible available just as an app to download. So it kind of depends on your audience. I believe they tend to be a little bit better too if you're in an area that, you know, is outside where you might have more glare. I think those tend to be a little bit more resilient to different environmental factors. I've had issues when I used tablets and other devices where you might have unusual glare or the screen is hard to read. It's probably worth testing it out to verify whether that's the case or not. It's probably some of the research that I would do. But I think if somebody is just used to having that one dedicated device, the nice thing about it, it takes you away from email. It takes you away from all the other things.
Yeah.
So if you're, you know, on a tablet, if you're on a cell phone, all of those other ways to take you out of that experience are still there. So I think that could be another good thing. If somebody just wants to be able to kind of shut out the outside world, they don't want to worry about physical books, and they just want to be able to, you know, have the joy of reading or listening to a book, I think it's a great option, just because it does limit, you know, a lot of those other outside distractions.
Heidi in Green Bay, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Heidi.
Hi, I'm calling about the lady that was getting, you know, rogue print jobs from other people who were on her network and her facility. I was wondering whether getting a VPN, whether if she were to get a VPN, would that work too? And wouldn't that give her a little more security even on that facility, beyond that facility network?
I was originally thinking that as well. Unfortunately, most likely the printer itself does not have VPN capability, and I think that's where the challenge is going to come in. I think for anyone using that wireless network, I think using a VPN will help to protect privacy and limit, you know, what devices can communicate with others. So VPN, at least for, you know, pretty much any other device, I think is a great idea. I think in terms of the printer, it's probably not going to be a solution, just because the printer itself probably does not have any capabilities to actually connect to a VPN network. And I think actually setting up how that would work on the end user devices would probably even be more challenging. So I'd say a yes for privacy. I'd say it's a great recommendation for anyone using kind of a shared network. For the printer, I think it's going to be kind of a limited option for solving the issue.
Yeah, and remind everybody about what is VPN.
Oh, yes. VPN is a virtual private network. And so you can kind of think of it as, you can be, and they always say tunnels. So I'll make a physical example. So imagine you're driving down the street. Everyone, when you're driving down the street can see you, they can hear you. If you're in a tunnel, unless somebody else is in that tunnel, they don't see you, they don't hear you. Maybe they know you're there, but they really have no information on the inside. So it helps to keep you private.
Jesse LeGrew, our guest today, information security architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. He's going to be with us right up until 12:30 today as we talk with him about a whole variety of tech issues, including navigating those Black Friday deals safely and holiday tech shopping, but taking other questions as well. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Or email to ideas@wpr.org. We'll take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Jesse LeGrew, information security architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. Great to have him back, and certainly I hope you'll join in. We've been talking about what you need to know when buying tech gifts this holiday season. We've also taken a look at some other technology questions or issues that you might have. So I hope you'll join in. The number is 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And let's take another call. Jim in northeast Wisconsin, it's your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hello. Hello, both of you. Thank you for this program. I'm a kind of a techie, and I enjoy all things techie and everything else that WPR does. I was listening to the discussion about the Kindle or an e-reader. I, in fact, do have a Kindle Paperwhite. It's not one of the early ones, but I've had it over 4 years. And it absolutely is easy to read, even in daylight without any backlighting. Very sharp characters, easy on the eyes. I do have the one that only uses Wi-Fi, but absolutely no issue because you've got OverDrive as an app or Libby, which is the recent one that allows you to download books from your public library. And I've been using it, again, over 4 years, traveled with work for it. No, I'm not, but I found it's been great for the marriage because if I like to read a little later at night, it doesn't light up the room as a traditional book light does. I do like books and the smell of books and the feel, but the Kindle is so, for me, it's just a no-brainer.
Oh, Jim, thank you so much for calling. Well, there's a satisfied customer, Jesse.
Yeah, I had some great feedback. I think that was the primary item I was interested in, and it is nice to know also when it's low light or high light, that it works really well. So it's a great option to have.
Yeah, thanks so much for that call. Phil in Mount Horeb, we'll go to you now. Hi, Phil.
Hi. I am concerned about keyloggers. I have had several security breaches over the last 25 years, and I'm wondering if the new Mozilla VPN is a solution to that problem, or if there is a product on the market that can go somewhere between my Wi-Fi and my computer that would help me isolate any unwanted keyloggers.
Mm-hmm. And what are keyloggers first, Jesse? You can explain.
Yeah, basically a keylogger is, based on the title, when you type information into your keyboard, it's something that records the data that you're typing in. So, for example, if you're logging into your computer, you might type in your username and password. A keylogger, which will generally run in the background on your computer, will actually take those characters you're typing and save it and potentially transmit it somewhere. So it's really recording all the keystrokes that you have on your keyboard. It might also be recording information in terms of where your mouse is going, but it can give somebody a lot of information in terms of what you use. But it's also a really good way of trying to retrieve passwords if people are typing them in on a regular basis.
Mm. And how do you detect? Is there any way to avoid it?
There are a few different things I'd probably recommend. In this case, I would probably be less concerned in terms of the wireless transmission. I'd be more concerned with the device that you're using that would actually be recording those keystrokes, because when it is recording that information, generally it's going to be on the device that you're using. There are ways to help to validate whether there is a keylogger or not on the system. One of my recommendations, if you're not quite sure if you do have a keylogger, if there has been concerns with either something on the device or something else, I might actually recommend completely backing up your data or being very selective about it, completely starting and rebuilding your computer from scratch and restoring data that you know is safe, or have a third party do it. Usually a keylogger is going to be some kind of malicious software running in the background. Sometimes antivirus will find it. Sometimes antivirus will not find it. It really just depends on what the software is. And there's a variety of different ways to be able to do this. I'd also recommend, make sure you do have antivirus software installed. It'll at least give you a better indication. But if you're not quite sure if the device you're using is safe, I think actually the only way to be completely certain is to to wipe and rebuild to make sure that the computer you're using is completely clean and that you do have the antivirus protections. Windows does have them built in if you're using the latest version of Windows. I do recommend it running the most updated software, and I think that will help if somebody is collecting that information locally. And I would also recommend, use trusted software. So if you are using Firefox or Chrome or a variety of other publicly available services that are generally widely used and are tried to be maintained, do use those. Because hopefully you're going to keep them up to date. Hopefully there will be no malicious software running in the background that could also capture that information. I think a VPN would be very, very useful to make sure your network communication is safe, so that if anyone was on wireless, they would not be able to see what information is kind of traveling either wirelessly or even if you were physically plugging into the internet. So I do think that from a network privacy perspective, having a VPN is going to help you quite a bit. From a keylogger perspective, the only real way if you're concerned with a device, you might need to rebuild it from scratch. But if you did have issues with other accounts being compromised, another recommendation I might have would also be to consider using a password manager. If you do have some kind of password compromise, for example, and you are using the same password in multiple locations, that could be an easy way for somebody to be able to log into multiple accounts if they were able to find one. And the password manager will help you keep unique passwords, and it can also help just keep it organized, because, I can't remember 30 passwords that are, 25 characters in length. It's just, I just can't do it.
No.
But a password manager helps me to do it. And in addition, I'd say if you do have something like multi-factor or two-factor authentication for any other service, turn those on. I'm not sure if the compromise, the security issues you've had have been for online accounts or your own computer, but when you can turn on that multiple factor, I think that also will save you a lot of hassle, because even if they do know your password, they're not going to be able to get in without bypassing that multi-factor authentication. So make sure your device is clean. Use a VPN for network privacy. but also password managers and making sure you have unique passwords and turning on multi-factor will also help secure those accounts, whether they're, you know, you're using them on the computer or using them on online services.
We have Tom with an email. He wants to download Chrome on his Dell computer that has Edge. But when he tries to download Chrome, he has to opt out of protections from Edge. Is there a way to download Chrome without opting out of the Edge protections?
Well, there is a lot of the protections that are built into Chrome are built into Edge. So those are basically built into the Windows operating system and Edge, which is the built-in web browser for Windows. Those are generally separate from any of the Chrome protections, and you should be able to use one without the other. One item I would recommend, a lot of the built-in capabilities, if you are looking from like a privacy perspective to make sure you have all the protections, I would take a look at the privacy settings, at least for Windows. That could be something to double check. By default, a lot of those items are turned on. That could have been one of the notifications that you were seeing on your side, just to make sure. And they might call it telemetry, they might call it privacy. But if you turn some of those data collection mechanisms off, I think that will help to protect a variety of your items. But I think otherwise, if you are using Chrome, the settings for Chrome, the settings for Edge should be relatively different. If you do have any other notes on that, please follow back up too. But they should be unique. If you are concerned, actually, and it does change settings for Edge, I don't like to say don't use another browser, but if you know if you have to disable protections for one to use the other, I'd probably only use the one where the protections were enabled, if that were the case. But usually you're going to be able to do both at the same time. You can only have one default browser at the same time. So, you know, when you click on a link, does it open in Chrome or does it open in Edge? But usually the security features are going to be independent on whether you're using which browser. So unless, you know, there's something else I'm missing, please do follow up. But, you know, if you do have something disabling your protections and you can't turn them back on, I would consider looking for an alternative.
Let's take a call again. Dot in Chippewa Falls, it's your turn. Hi, Dot.
Hi. I have an important question. Most people I talk to don't want to address this problem. But let's say, like, I've never had a computer. I do not want one. I feel they are unsafe. And, okay, for instance, let's say you want to order something. Oh, you can't unless you have email. You got to have a computer. That's very frustrating. I do not trust the computer system. You know, I tell people this one particular thing, and usually they don't respond because they're just so used to computers, they don't want to hear it. But I'll tell them, hey, someday the bank may tell you or some other place may say, I'm sorry, we have no record you have money in the bank. All the systems are down. Everything is lost. And if they say,
you're
oh,
worried.
They have backup. Well, backup can get lost.
You're worried about this. Do you have a phone, Dad?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you have
I have a smartphone, but I'm dumb on it.
Oh, okay.
Because I the only thing I use it for is as a regular phone. Otherwise, once in a while, I will speak to Google and ask a question.
Okay. So Dot could use her phone, but it does. It sounds like she doesn't want to use her phone to buy online, and I don't know how else she would do it, but maybe there is a way. Do you know any ways to do that, Jesse?
Yeah, and I think this is actually a challenge a lot of people are kind of undertaking right now as well, mainly, you know, whenever you give out your email, you give out your phone number, you give out other pieces of data to, you know, really anyone, It might be used for something you don't want, or it could be used to track you and do a variety of other things. So it's a real challenge actually people deal with as a dedicated profession, just to make sure that you can kind of quote unquote be kept off the grid. If somebody didn't want to purchase items online and to be as safe and I guess as anonymous as possible, there are some recommendations I would have, which would include using unique email addresses with any service that you're using, potentially even creating an email account only for one purchase and only use it once. You can also do the same thing with phone numbers, whether it's using what they call burner phones, or you can use voice over IP services to help anonymize that information. So that can help with some of the tracking information you might give to someone you're purchasing something from. In terms of securing like the transaction on the back end of it, you know, if you do have to give a credit card number or if you do have to use another account, there are limited things that you can do, at least to minimize the risk. One thing you could do is use cryptocurrency, such as Bitcoin, but that also requires, you know, a lot of work as well. So there are a lot of things that can be done to do purchasing online where it can be, you know, more anonymized and a little bit potentially less risky. But in the end, a lot of the centralized services you're using are connected to these systems in some way, shape, or form. So some risk does exist, but I would agree that anytime you put your data out there, anytime you're reusing your email, your phone number, or other pieces of data, the more likely somebody else is going to be able to get that information and use it for something that could negatively impact you, whether it's identity theft, fraud, or something else. So I don't have a whole lot of great recommendations. The only thing I could recommend is buying things in person. I think still has a benefit. You're still going to have to use a lot of other digital mechanisms, credit cards, and everything else. But most of the time, if you are using like the Google Wallet or Apple Pay, most of those are not actually sending the credit card data. They're sending kind of unique pieces of data, kind of almost like throwaway credit cards when they're doing each transaction. So it helps to try and secure that back-end credit card data from not having to transmit it. But then, of course, you do need to have those services, whether it's turned on your device or through a centralized service. Not a whole lot of great ideas. But I think you do have some options with creating different email accounts, which I think will help. And you can also use alternate phone numbers to try to separate your primary phone number from a phone number that you use for services, which, you know, will reduce the risk of somebody else getting that and, spamming you with phone calls or getting other kinds of malicious content. And there's a lot of online services, or you can get, you know, physical burner phones to do that as well. There's a whole lot of great things to look in if you're really interested. I would say look up open source intelligence and privacy, and you will find a lot of great information. I know there are a variety of other resources, podcasts, and a lot of writings because, you know, a lot of people have to deal with this as a real risk mitigation tool to try to remain private online because, you know, you might be famous and people might be looking for you. So it's something that a lot of people do need to consider. And online purchasing is one of those items, but you can go really, really deep into that field and still be learning something every single day.
Robert wrote in an email that they are considering buying a pen text scanner, like ScanMaker, but they see mixed reviews. They will, pen scanners work, and do you have any recommendations?
I've heard people use them in the past. I think the technology has been getting better over time. Really the biggest challenge, and so if you've never seen a pen scanner, I mean, it looks like a pen. It's kind of like taking a page of text and you're kind of scanning line by line, and which takes a long time. But then it, you know, combines all that information to give you one solid image. I think that it can be really useful. I think a variety of them do have pretty good ratings online. They might have built-in language translation as well. I think they could work. For me, I mean, most cell phones are easy enough to take a picture of a document, and you can actually get that translated relatively easily right now. So it might be really good. I think there are other mechanisms that I would actually give a try just to see what it looks like. But if you do have to do a lot of this, those pen scanners take a lot of time.
Yeah.
If you have a lot of documents to scan, and I would really just consider getting a dedicated scanner that's specialized to do it a lot quicker and might have other built-in software that might give you a better benefit. So, yeah, I would say it could be a good option. But volume is really the biggest key, and even those pen scanners can be kind of expensive.
Maybe time for one more or two more from the Washington Post holiday gift guide. They mention Samsung the Frame television, which I hadn't heard of.
Yeah, and the TV is interesting. So, you know, that idea of having something that's a little bit less intrusive, so it kind of just melds into your surroundings. It's a really nice idea because I think people do want to minimize the visual aspect of seeing technology around your house. And I think it's a great option. And TVs are getting thinner and thinner all the time. And I think we're going to see a lot more of this where you no longer have this object in the middle of a room. It tends to kind of merge with it. And I think it's a really cool idea because you can also kind of have a picture if you just have a background you know, on your wall. So you don't even really notice it until you actually want to use it. It's a cool idea.
I think so, too. And JBL Flip 5 Bluetooth speakers were also on that list.
Yeah, the JBL speakers have been really popular. Bluetooth speakers in general have been really, really interesting lately. And they, you know, tend to have a lot of color, a lot of different options. And I think these also might come with they may not come with microphones. I am not sure. I think one of the items when getting any kind of Bluetooth speaker, especially if you do use it, if you are working or doing something remote, consider whether you do want to have a microphone built in with it. Cause that could be something if you are trying to do a conference call or doing something wirelessly that could be of use. So a good option to keep in mind.
Jesse, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for being with us. We'll look forward to your next visit. Thank you, Jess.
Thank you.
Jesse LeGru, Information Security Architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. He'll be back in a couple of months and we'll do this all over again. Looking ahead, tomorrow at 11, we talk about the importance of holiday traditions for mental health with Shyla Morgain. And then at 11:45, we talk about pancreatic health. In the meantime, I hope you'll stay with us right through the afternoon. Lots in store. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network.